I had a few moments to study the enemy as we closed. The vast bulk of the Hyksos army was still upon the east bank. They had gone into bivouac, and they were so numerous that their encampment stretched away to the foothills of the desert, as far as I could see from the deck of the Breath of Horus. King Salatus was sending only a small force across the river. Almost certainly they were under orders to race down the west bank and to capture the funerary temple of Pharaoh Mimosa before we were able to remove the treasure. We bore down rapidly on the convoy of Hyksos ships, and I shouted to Tanis above the beat of the drums and the bloodthirsty cheers of our rascals, "They've taken their horses across already! Look over there!" Almost unprotected, except for a few armed guards, there was a huge herd of these terrible animals gathered on the west bank. I guessed there were several hundred of them. Even at this distance we could make out their long flowing manes and tails streaming in the strong north wind. They were a disturbing sight to us. Some of the men around me shuddered and swore with loathing of them. I heard one of them mutter darkly, "The Hyksos feed those monsters of theirs on human flesh like tame lions or jackals. That is the reason for this slaughter. They must have food for them. We can only guess how many of our comrades are already in their bellies." I could not contradict him, and I even had a queasy feeling in my guts that he might be speaking the truth. I turned my attention from those beautiful but gory monsters to the galleys in the stream ahead of us. "We have caught them taking the chariots and the men over," I pointed out to Tanis. The decks of Nembut's captured vessels were piled high with chariots and equipment, and crowded with the Hyksos charioteers who were being ferried across. As they realized their predicament, some of the Hyksos tried to turn and run back for the east bank. They collided with the ships that followed them and locked together. They drifted helplessly on the current. Tanis laughed savagely to see their confusion and shouted into the wind, "General signal! Increase the beat to attack speed! Light the fire arrows!" The Hyksos had never experienced an attack with fire arrows, and at the thought of what was coming I laughed with Tanis, but nervously. Then suddenly I stiffened and my laughter choked off. "Tanis!" I seized his arm. "Look! Look at the galley dead ahead! On the poop! There is our traitor!" For a moment Tanis did not recognize the tall, stately figure at the rail of the galley, for he wore fish-scale armour and a tall Hyksos war helmet. Then abruptly he roared with anger and outrage. "Intef! Why did we not guess it was him? I see it so clearly now. He has guided Salatus to this very Egypt. He went east and deliberately tempted the Hyksos with accounts of the treasures of Egypt." My outrage and hatred matched those of Tanis. Tanis threw up the bow Lanata and loosed an arrow, but the range was long, and the point glanced off Lord Intef's armour. I saw his head jerk round at the shock, and he looked across the water directly at us. He singled us out, Tanis and myself, and for a moment I thought I saw fear in his eyes. Then he ducked out of sight below the gunwale of the galley. Our leading squadron flew into the pack of confused and milling shipping. With a tearing crunch, our bronze ramming horn struck Intef's galley amidships, and I was thrown off my feet by the impact. When I struggled up again, the oarsmen had already backed water, and with another rending screech of timbers, we disengaged from the stricken ship. At the same time, our archers were pouring a heavy rain of fire arrows into her. The heads were bound with pitch-soaked papyrus stems that burned like comets, each leaving a trail of sparks and smoke as they flew into the sails and top hamper. The north wind fanned the flames, and they leapt up the rigging with a fiendish exuberance. The waters flooded in through the gaping hole we had ripped in her belly, and she listed over sharply. The sails caught fire and burned with startling rapidity. The heat singed my eyelashes even at that distance. The heavy mainsail, burning fiercely, fluttered down over the deck, trapping the crew and crowded charioteers beneath it. Their screams shrilled in our ears as their hair and clothing burst into flames. I remembered the plain at Abnab and felt no pity, as they leapt in flames from the ship's side and were drawn under by the weight of their armour. Only a swirl of ripples and a lingering puff of steam marked where each of them had disappeared. All down the line the Hyksos galleys were burning and sinking. They had neither the experience nor the skill to counter our attack, and they were as helpless as we had been before the assault of their chariots. Our ships backed off and charged again, crushing in their hulls and sending torrents of flaming arrows into them. I was watching the first galley that we had attacked, seeking another glimpse of Lord Intef. She was almost gone when suddenly he reappeared. He had thrown off his helmet and his armour, and wore only a linen breech-clout. He balanced easily on the gunwale of the sinking ship, and then as the flames reached out to embrace him, he joined his hands above his head and dived overboard. He was a son of the Nile, at home in her waters. He knifed through the surface, and came up a minute later, and 50 paces from where he had struck, with his long wet hair sleeked back, so that he looked like a swimming otter. "There he goes!" I screamed at Tanos. "Run the swine under!" Instantly Tanos gave the order to turn the breath of Horus, but quick as the helmsman was on the steering oar, she was slow to come around. Meanwhile Lord Intef slipped through the water like a fish, reaching out overarm for the east bank and the protection of his Hyksos allies. "Swing hard!" Tanos signalled his starboard bank of oars, and they thrust the bows around. As soon as we were on line with the swimmer, Tanos gave the order to pull together, and we shot in pursuit. By now, Lord Intef was far ahead and close in to the bank, where 5,000 Hyksos archers waited with their long, recurved bows strung and ready to give him covering fire. "Seth, piss on them!" Tanos yelled in defiance. "We will take Intef out from under their noses!" And he drove the breath of Horus directly at them, bearing down upon the lone swimming figure. As we came within range of the shore, the Hyksos loosed a volley at us that darkened the sky, and their arrows fell in a whistling cloud around us. They dropped so thickly that the deck soon bristled with them like the quills in a goose's wing, and some of our sailors were struck and fell writhing and bleeding from their benches. But we were already close on Intef, and he looked back over his shoulder, and I saw the terror in his face as he realized he could not escape our sharp prow. I ignored the arrows and ran to the bows to scream down at him. "I hated you from the first day we met. I hated every loathsome touch. I wanted to watch you die. You are evil! Evil!" He heard me. I saw it in his eyes. And then his dark gods intervened yet again. One of the sinking Hyksos galleys drifted down upon us, spouting fire and smoke. If she had touched us, we would have gone up with her in a tower of flame. Tanos was forced to put the steering oar over and to signal urgently for his oarsmen to back water. The burning galley drifted between the shore and where we lay heaved to. Lord Intef was hidden from my view, but when the burning galley was past, I saw him again. Three brawny Hyksos charioteers were dragging him from the water and up the steep bank. He paused at the top of the bank and looked back at us, and then disappeared from sight, leaving me trembling with rage and frustration. Our men were still being struck down by the falling arrows, so Tanos gave the order, and we wheeled away and sped back to join in the destruction of those few vessels of the convoy that was still afloat. As the last of these listed over and then rolled onto her back, the green Nile waters poured into her and quenched the flames in a hissing cloud of steam. Our archers leaned over the side and shot the few surviving Hyksos, who splashed weakly on the surface. Immediately they were all drowned, Tanos turned his attention to the west bank and to the small party of the enemy and the herd of horses that was stranded there. As our galley sped into the shore, the Hyksos herders scattered and ran. But our men leapt ashore, sword in hand, and raced after them. The Hyksos were charioteers and accustomed to riding into battle. Our lads were foot soldiers and trained to run. Like a pack of hounds after a jackal, our men isolated and surrounded them. They hacked them down and left 100 bleeding corpses scattered across the green fields of standing Durakorn. I had jumped ashore behind the first wave of our troops. I had serious business in mind. There was no point in making models and designing chariots without a means of driving the spoked wheels that I had seen in my imagination. It required an enormous act of courage on my part to start towards that herd of terrible creatures that the Hyksos herders had abandoned close to the water's edge. Each step was an effort of will, for there were many hundreds of them, and they were obviously restless and alarmed by the shouting and the running of men and the clash of arms. I was certain that at any moment they would rush at me like wounded lions. I imagined them gobbling my still warm and twitching flesh, and my courage evaporated and I could go no closer. From a distance of 100 paces, I stood staring in dreadful fascination at these savage predators. But I was poised to turn and rush back to the safety of the galley at the first sign of an attack. This was the first opportunity that I had been given to study these animals. They were mostly of a dun colour, but with subtle shadings of bay and chestnut and roan. One or two of them were as black as Seth. They stood as tall as a man, with a full barrel chest and long necks that arched gracefully. Their manes were like the tresses of a beautiful woman, and their hides glowed in the sunlight, as though they had been burnished. One of those nearest to me threw back its head and rolled its upper lip, and I recoiled as I saw the great square white teeth that lined its jaw. It kicked its hind legs and emitted such a terrifying neighing sound that I turned and started back towards the ship with some alacrity. Then a hoarse yell from one of our soldiers near me arrested my cowardly retreat. "Kill the Hyksos monsters! Kill the monsters!" The cry was taken up by the others. "No!" I screamed. And my concern for my own safety was forgotten. "No! Save the horses! We need them!" My voice was lost in the angry war cry of our troops as they rushed at the herd of horses with their shields raised and their swords still dripping with the blood of the herders. Some of the men paused to knock arrows to the bow and fire them into the herd. "No!" I cried, as a glossy black stallion reared and screamed with an arrow standing out of his withers. "No, please, no!" I cried again, as one of the sailors ran in with a light war axe and hacked through the fetlock joint of the young mare. She was crippled by the blow and could not escape the next stroke of the axe that caught her between the ears and dropped her kicking in the dust. "Leave them! Leave them!" I pleaded. But the arrows brought down a dozen of the animals, and the swords and axes maimed and killed a dozen more before the herd broke under the assault, and 300 horses bolted and went galloping out in a mass across the dusty western plain towards the desert. I shaded my eyes to watch them go, and it seemed to me that part of my heart went with them. When they had disappeared, I ran to protect and tend to those animals that were left maimed and arrowed amongst the papyrus beds. But the soldiers were ahead of me. So great was their fury that they gathered around the fallen carcasses. In a frenzy of hatred, they plunged their blades into the unresisting flesh and hacked at the broken heads. A little to one side stood an isolated clump of papyrus reeds. Behind this, and screened from the rampaging soldiers, stood the black stallion that I had first seen hit by an arrow. He was sorely struck and staggering as he limped forward, the arrow deep in his chest. Without thought for my own safety, I ran towards him, and then stopped as he turned to face me. Only then did I realize my danger. Here was a wounded beast that, like a lion in the same straits, must surely charge at me. The stallion and I stared at each other, and I felt fear fall away like a discarded cloak from my shoulders. His eyes were huge and swimming with pain. Gentle eyes, beautiful eyes, that made my heart swell with pity. He made a soft fluttering sound and limped towards me. I held out my hand and touched his muzzle, and it felt like warm Arabian silk. He came directly to me and pressed his forehead to my chest in a gesture of trust and appeal that was almost human. I knew that he was asking for my help. Instinctively, I flung my arms around his neck and embraced him. I wanted more than anything in my life at that moment to save him, but from his nostrils warm blood trickled down my chest. I knew he was hit through the lungs and that he was dying. He was far beyond any help that I could give him. "My poor darling, what have those stupid, ignorant bastards done to you?" I whispered. Dimly, in my distress and spiritual agony, I realized that my life had changed again, and that this dying creature had made that change. Somehow, I seemed to sense that in the years ahead, wherever I left my footsteps in the African earth, the hoofprints of a horse would lie beside them. I had found another great love to fill my days. The stallion made that fluttering sound once more, and his breath was warm on my skin. Then his legs collapsed under him, and he fell heavily on his side and lay gasping air into his punctured lungs. Bright red bubbles frothed from the wound in his chest. I went down beside him, and lifted that noble head into my lap, and waited with him until he died. And then I stood up and went back to where the breath of Horus was beached.